Good morning, everybody. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Wednesday, July 22nd meeting of the Portland City Council. The mayor is in the Vatican meeting with the Pope on climate change and human trafficking, which is pretty wonderful that he's representing our city. So I will be presiding. First, we have a welcome. In fact, we have two welcomes. Commissioner Fish, would you like to do yours first?
Thank you very much, Madam President. As the current commissioner in charge of the Bureau of Environmental Services, I'm very pleased today to acknowledge our four interns who are part of a pilot program that we've put in place to help us do a better job of identifying and recruiting talent in our community. And our first, what we call cohort, is made up of four very special people. So I'm going to ask the four of you to stand for a second, and I'll just read their names, and apologies in advance if I mispronounce. Andrew Antonidis, Roosevelt High School graduate and who is heading to Portland State University. Juliza Alvarez, who is at Rosemary Anderson High School, and she's a rising senior. Carlos Ramos, who is a incoming junior at Roosevelt High School. And Mark Nguyen, who is at David Douglas High School, an incoming junior. They've all expressed interest in the things that we do at the Bureau of Environmental Services. We're really honored to have them as summer interns, paid interns, Commissioner Fritz. And we're hoping that as they think about their futures, that they think about careers with the City of Portland. Can we give them a round of applause?
Thank you. Welcome.
Thanks very much.
And second, we have another group visiting with us today, the Office of Management and Finance Job Shadow Day student participants. They are 16 graduate students joining us from the Oregon Fellows Summer Program at PSU's Hatfield School of Government, and they're joining us to observe how City Council really works. Good luck with that. As part of their summer program, these students are taking part of, in the Job Shadow Day, which has been a partnership with PSU since 2007. Today, they are matched up with city professionals in a variety of disciplines to learn more about jobs in public service with the city and in the Office of Management and Finance. These students are from all over the country. They come to Oregon to participate in this PSU program and complete either a 10-week or an 8-month job placement with public agencies throughout the Portland area. This year's students are focusing their studies in the area of financial management, sustainability, project and grant management, social and environmental policy analysis, economics, budgeting, quantitative research methods, and urban planning. So the Oregon Fellows, would you please rise? Welcome, and we hope you enjoy your day, and thank you to the Office of Management and Finance for continuing to host this educational event. Would you all please welcome our graduate students? Thank you. With that, would you please call the roll?
Saltzman?
Here.
Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Hales.
So good morning. We have a relatively short agenda today, so I think we will not have any difficulty with sticking to time limits on public testimony. We ask that if you agree with something that you do a thumbs up or a jazz hands. If you disagree, thumbs down, something like that. But please refrain from audible noises such as booing, cheering, clapping, etc., unless you're given permission to do so. Thank you. Please read number 780.
Request of Barry Sutton to address council regarding area of land for the homeless.
Mr. Sutton here? Yes, great. Welcome. Please give us your name for the record, and then you have 3 minutes.
Barry Sutton, and I want to engage in discussion with most everyone here. Yeah, thank you. There are three city blocks, empty city blocks, in back side of Washington High School, and I believe they could be made into an encampment. Other cities have done this. Then again, also it has been done in the city of Portland, and that's it. It's history. It's over with. But you see, the other place was in Northwest Portland, the first or second Dignity Village. It was formed. But the only thing is, well, Father Mayo helped with, I guess, $40,000 for the outhouses, the water, all the other things for several months, I think. Anyway, the only thing is that it was owned by the Department of Transportation. Here, the City of Portland would own this area. Now, we all like to think about jobs and stuff like that, and maybe people getting to work and stuff like that. I kind of doubt that very, very much. So anyway, about jobs, like janitors, if they have a job to do, you know, they can't sweep their dirt under the rug. You understand, they have to pick it all up and take care of it, toss it away. If they do, they aren't going to be employed any longer. But I guess, excuse me for speaking this way, if it's too harsh, but politicians, if they don't do something, they're just not elected the second time, or there's a lot of criticism from the newspapers or public. But you see, there was a 10-year plan for the homeless, 10 years without a place to stay or anything. And that's nearly up. And the homeless people, the many homeless people around Portland live on sidewalks and under bridges and stuff like that. And the city, who would give them a place to stay, to live? I would think the city would be the one to provide for these people. Now, these people live in the on the sidewalks, on various sidewalks, underneath, Commissioner Novak, underneath various bridges and stuff like that. And I've been walking along and noticing that those places are vacant. They aren't occupied anymore. And apparently, the police are just moving them wherever. And this is unconscionable. Now, I want to engage in conversation with you about this. Commissioner Fritz, you gave me a letter of the various ways that it shouldn't, you know, that could we discuss that I could refute even some of those ways?
You're certainly welcome to make an appointment to come see me in my office. Thank you very much for your testimony.
But nothing here.
No, right this now. Communications is for citizens to tell us whatever you want to say. It's not a conversation time.
Okay, then.
Thank you very much. And your time is up, Mr. Sutton. But you're welcome to stop by my office and make an appointment.
But this is a matter of doing one's job or sweeping dirt under the rug. Do you understand? And will you tell Mayor Hales too?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Take care now. Bye bye.
Please read number 781.
Request of Kristen Rose to address council regarding people sleeping on sidewalks and parks.
Hi. Good morning. I'm Kristen.
Good morning.
I live in Southeast Portland, and what brought me here to talk to you this morning is also related to our homeless crisis. I've come to tell you about a series of experiences that I've had over the past year that are really troubling experiences. In the past year, I've had two experiences where I've encountered homeless people on the street that are nearly dead. And I'm not exaggerating to you when I say that. I gave CPR to one of them, and it was right next to Director Park. It was on my lunch hour. I've had two experiences in Portland in the past year where I've encountered people that are shooting heroin on the sidewalk in daylight. One of the times that happened, I had some visitors in town, and I was taking them on a tour of the waterfront. I've also had one experience in the last year when I literally saw someone trying to kill someone else with their bare hands. It was actually my 4.5-year-old daughter who was the one who noticed it. She was on the back of my bike, and we were biking down Nato Parkway, and she pointed to a woman who had her hands around someone's neck and was violently trying to strangle them. I'm one of a number of people in Portland that thinks that we have crossed the line from having a homeless problem to a homeless crisis. And I'm asking you to act like it's a crisis. I see a tremendous amount of work that's happening in the city, and I appreciate that work. But I don't see the urgency that a crisis would really deserve. To me, the difference between addressing an issue and combating a long-term problem is it's like riding a ship that's going into troubled waters. But addressing a crisis is like going in when the ship has hit the iceberg and it's starting to sink. And I'm here to tell you today that my impression, when I look around Portland, I'm in Old Town, I'm on the waterfront, I'm in the southeast under the underpasses, the bridges. I see scenes that, to me, feel like almost post-apocalyptic. They're like scenes that you might expect in a third world country. And I'm asking you to start addressing this like the crisis that it feels like to me and to a lot of our neighbors. When you're in the midst of a crisis, you don't have time to make a 10-year plan. You have to act immediately. When you're in the midst of a crisis, it's pointless to talk about the fact that it wasn't in the budget, because you just have to act and you have to find a way to do it. And when you're in the midst of a crisis, you certainly aren't listening to developers who are saying, you know what, we see the ship is sinking, we see people drowning, but we're not allowing you to pull them to shore in this neighborhood because this doesn't fit with our investments.
Thank you for your testimony. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening.
Please read number 782.
Request of Sean T. Tell to address council regarding a cancer and diabetic trailer park. He has informed us he will not be coming.
Thank you. Number 783.
Request of Julianne Pineda to address council regarding a quiet zone designation for intersections of Northeast 138, Northeast 148, and Sandy Boulevard.
Good morning. Welcome.
Morning. Yes, my name is Julianne Pineda. I'm on the noise committee for the Welks Community Association, and I'll read just a brief statement that I have requesting the mayor and city commissioners for a quiet zone designation, and I have copies of that which I will leave with the council clerk. This is a brief statement. It's a request for a quiet zone designation for the railroad crossings located at Northeast Sandy Boulevard and Northeast 148th and Northeast 138th and 148th. Currently, the train noise at these crossings unnecessarily disturbs many of the residents in the Wilkes and Argay neighborhoods. The train noise at these intersections is much too loud and impacts thousands of individuals near the crossings and perhaps as far as 1 mile away. The noise from the trains in either direction at these crossings begins as early as 3:30 a.m. and continues well past 11 p.m. It is very difficult to get sleep when horns are being sounded very loudly at these intersections. It is understood from the Federal Railroad Administration guidelines that quiet zone regulations don't eliminate the use of locomotive bells at the crossings, but help in the reduction of train noise. It is noted that communities wishing to establish quiet zones must go through the city officials who follow through with the needed approvals to get the process going to establish a quiet zone. Reason for this request, it is well documented that unnecessarily externally based loud noise, which impacts sleeping and a restful environment, leads to poor health and leads to insomnia, which causes poor performance on the job and other serious health problems. Many living those near these intersections are working adults and children going to school, and the never-ending loud train horns are causing much concern. The train horns are very uneven and very loud, and it seems that it's up to the train conductors to step up and ramp up the noise level without too much regard to those living nearby. Although they're addressing safety, many times it's up to the individual to press on the horn as much as possible. In order to create a quiet zone, the City of Portland must take the lead in permitting the establishment of the quiet zone at these two intersections, Northeast Sandy and Northeast 138th and Northeast 148th. The City of Portland has to send a notice to the railroad officials and the FRA on its request to establish a quiet zone. For the Noise Committee, Wells Community Association, sincerely, Julianne Pineda. And thank you so much.
Before you leave, I just want to ask the president of the council a question. I remember as Parks Commissioner once a quiet zone came up because it was a track that intersected a park. And so I remember that we had a voice in that. But I don't know offhand how the city, who in the city is charged with administering this. Is this ONI or is this somewhere else?
I was just going to turn to my colleague on the right here and see whether it's transportation or whether it's the noise.
Make sure we have the right place for you to go.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think actually PBOT normally discusses this with ODOT and the feds.
Mm. So that's Commissioner Novick, and you could stop by his office and give.
Yeah, please do.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. And we all learned something this morning, at least I did. Thank you. Please read 784.
Request of Floyd R. Fox to address council regarding city land use laws.
Mr. Fox? If he comes in later, we can go back to that. With that, let's go to the consent agenda. Does anybody want to pull anything off the consent agenda? Nobody in the audience, so please call the roll on the consent agenda.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Fritz?
A couple of really great contracts in here with excellent minority women, emerging small business procurement services, so well done. Aye. Please read time certain 785.
Proclaim July 26, 2015 to be Oliver P. Lent Day in Portland.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Madam President. We have a proclamation in honor of Lent's Founders Day, which is coming up, and Oliver P. Lent, who is one of the founders. We have the neighborhood chair, Jesse Cornett. You want to come on up, and I'll, I don't know if you had anybody else to come up. But I'll read the proclamation, and then we'll turn it over to the neighborhood for a few minutes. Whereas Oliver P. Lent purchased a 190-acre farmstead just outside of the Portland city limits that later became the site of the present-day Lent's community, and whereas Mr. Lent was very involved and contributed much to his church and community, including service as Justice of the Peace, road supervisor, and as Master of the Grange, and whereas Mr. Lent was also a leader in business, even operating a sawmill on Johnson Creek near Southeast 92nd Avenue that gave employment to many early settlers, and whereas Mr. Lent also had deep feelings for education and donated land opposite his home as a site for one of the first Lent's schools, a one-room hewed log cabin, where he was the school director and later was clerk of the school board. And whereas the official town of Lent, Oregon, was registered in 1892 and voted to be annexed by the city of Portland later. Whereas Lent remains one of Portland's largest and most diverse neighborhoods and continues to celebrate its diversity and founders by hosting an annual Founders Day parade and street fair on the final Sunday of the month of July. Now therefore, I, Charlie Hills, mayor of the city of Portland, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim that Sunday, July 26, 2015, is Oliver P. Lent Day in Portland, and encourage all residents to learn more about this neighborhood's rich history at the Founders Day Parade and Lent's Street Fair. I'll turn it over to the neighborhood chair, Jesse Cornett.
Thank you very much. For the record, Jesse Cornett, chair of the Lent's Neighborhood Association. Thank you very much for taking up this issue. And I'll introduce Rebecca Stavignard, who's been active in the Neighborhood and Neighborhood Association for a long time, most recently starting what was a simple little playgroup that's bringing life into the neighborhood on a lot of weekends this summer. So it's exciting to see. So I think, so Lent's neighborhood, the city has spent a bundle of money trying to revitalize it. The energy for what could happen there is palpable in the neighborhood right now. Events like these, recognition like this, are really helping drive a lot of enthusiasm so the city can achieve some of its goals. Last year at our street fair, we had about 6,000 folks show up. We're hoping to exceed that this year. If folks cannot make it this Sunday, we have a farmer's market in the town center every Sunday from 10 to 3. Show up on any sunny Sunday in the summer, and what you can see is the promise that the Lent's neighborhood has. genuine excitement in the neighborhood right now. Things that may seem inconsequential to other neighborhoods, such as a brew pub opening within a month, are a really big deal for us, and we're very excited about that and the city's partnership. I think Oliver P. Lent would be very proud of this city council. I think he'd be excited for the reason the mayor's absent today and what the neighborhood of Lentz has become, both preserving some of the things close, like Leech Garden and Zinger Farm, the farmer's market, and much more. Kind of disappointed that with our timing, we weren't able to get any of his descendants here today, but they were excited the city is doing this as well. So Sunday is the Founders Day Parade, and I hope to see some of you there, and I will turn it over to Becca.
Good morning. Thank you. My name is Rebecca Stavenjord. I'm the East County Community Liaison for Multnomah County and also a proud resident of Lentz for over 10 years. So I just wanted to take a couple of moments today to speak about the spirit of our community. Oliver P. Lent was a quintessential pioneer. He ventured west from Ohio in 1892, and it wasn't enough for him to settle within the city. He had to start his own. So he and his son, George, started the town of Lentz. And ever since then, Lentz has been attracting people who like to do things kind of their own way. It's sometimes a little bit harder, but it's always worthwhile, and we're very proud of that work. Today, Lentz is still a community of pioneers. Some come from Ohio, like Mr. Lent, and others come from places like Hanoi, Kiev, Puebla, and many other cities and countries from all around the world. The pioneer spirit of Oliver P. Lent lives on today in many of the projects that Jesse mentioned, also at the Green Lentz Tool Library, which is staffed by volunteers from the community, the Malden Court Community Orchard, which is in progress in Southwest Lentz, the Jiffy Mart on 82nd Avenue, which has rallied some really amazing support from local neighbors, our weekly International Farmers Market, which is truly an amazing place to be on Sunday. It's about families coming together to start things like the Little Lentils Playgroup that Jesse mentioned, paint intersections in our neighborhood, two of which are sparkling this summer with fresh paint. And as we speak this morning, there is a group of neighbors with the Lentz Active Watch that are clearing brush and removing debris from one of the alleyways at Southeast 84th and Foster. And they're turning it into a positive community space with a 24-hour national night out scheduled for August 8th. It's this attitude that I think is the best in Portland, and for this reason, it's so nice to see that the City Council today is congratulating and recognizing the legacy of Oliver P. Lent. Thank you.
Thank you both very much.
I have two questions. So first of all, it's Lent because it was the Lent, more than one Lent. Is that why it's
the town of Lentz was named after Mr. Lent and
the
his
whole family,
family
though, mm-hmm. right? And secondly, what was Mrs. Lent called?
Good question.
Trick question.
It's Mrs. Lent.
Madam President.
Nice one. Well,
wow, that's a very interesting, good question that one of us should know the answer to. Definitely me, but I don't.
Well, next year. Hopefully an Oliver and Mrs. Lent day, because I bet she was had a fair amount to do with surviving the trail and birthing George and such. So.
I didn't expect any hardballs during this particular.
Well, but Jesse, I actually just was confident that you would know the answer because you generally know the answer
I
to
should.
All my questions.
Talking about hardballs, when is baseball starting up?
Next spring.
Oh yeah.
So.
And that will be a short season.
It is.
Triple A or.
It is the even the director of the league refers to it as a small ball. These are kids that play college baseball and they want to continue to build their skills. As baseball fans know, they're wooden bats. They have short seasons, and these are the kids that want to continue and play in the majors someday. So as soon as the college season is over, they go out and they do this for no money all around the West Coast. So it should be a lot of fun. So the Portland Pickles. We're excited to have them.
Portland Pickles.
Yeah. And for those that aren't aware, which I actually wasn't, that is actually a baseball term. So
Pickles is a
yes.
baseball term?
Yes. Oh, so okay. When you're stuck in between bases. You're in a pickle?
You're in a pickle. Oh,
you're in a pickle. So it's sort of clever. I know the baseball fan here is giving me an eye.
You've just added to my baseball knowledge. I'd never heard that being caught in a rundown is referred to as being a pickle.
Well, great. Well, thank you very much, and thank you for your leadership. And we have a proclamation here. If you'd like, maybe we can do a council picture.
Absolutely. Okay. I'd like to invite, actually, Amanda Gerasi, who's coordinating the street fair as well, and her son to join us for the picture.
Yeah, that'd be great.
job.
Jesse, I'm so sorry. I'm not going to make it this weekend because I have to go to Corgi Weekend at the beach.
I'll see you soon. Thank you. Commissioner Fritz, can we suspend the rules and take the 10 o'clock 3 minutes early?
I think since it's a proclamation, that would, am I getting the evil eye from the city attorney? We're good? Okay, so let's move to the 10 o'clock time certain, number 786,
Christopher?
Please.
786, proclaim August 1, 2015 to be a day of recognition for Portland Opera's 50th anniversary in Portland.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Madam President. And before I begin, I'd like to welcome our honored guest, Portland Opera's General Director Christopher Mattagliano. If you're going to let, if you're going to lead an opera company, you have to have a name like Christopher Mattagliano. And 2015 is a special year for the arts here in Portland. From Portlandia's 30th birthday to the 35th anniversary of the Percent for Arts program. But the Portland Opera has them all beat. This year, they're celebrating their 50th anniversary. And I think we all remember the incredible performance of Carmen's aria right here in Council Chambers in February. And now they're closing their season with a bang with a street fair on August 1st, followed by a live outdoor simulcast of their The Elixir of Love performance in the Newmark. And before we introduce our honored guest, I'm pleased to read the following proclamation that the mayor has issued to celebrate this important milestone. Whereas the Portland Opera launched in Portland in 1964 with a production of Die Fledermaus at the Madison High School. You'll correct me if I screwed that up. Whereas the opera grew to become a first-class company, hosting important premieres as well as contemporary and classic works. And whereas in 1994, Portland Opera became the first American company to present a subscription series of nationally touring Broadway shows. And whereas the opera established its new home at the Hampton Opera Center in Portland's Central East Side in 2003, and whereas the Portland Opera is dedicated to expanding access to the arts in our community, including the Portland Opera to Go program, which brings one-hour versions of classic operas to schools and community groups statewide. Whereas General Manager Christopher Mattagliano, Music Director George Manahan, and Portland Opera Board of Directors, staff, and performing artists are poised to launch opera in Portland into the next 50 years. Now, therefore, I, Charlie Hales, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, to hereby proclaim August 1st, 2015 to be a day of recognition for Portland Opera's 50th anniversary in Portland and encourage all residents to observe this day. Chris, welcome.
Thank you,
congratulations.
Sir. Congratulations. Thank you all for honoring Portland Opera today. We're very grateful to receive this recognition. I want to introduce two of our senior directors, our Director of Artistic Operations, Claire Buravac, and our Director of Marketing and Communications, Mark Tiarx. They're with me today. Portland is a city justly famous for the growth of beautiful things, and opera, for some of us, is among the most beautiful of all things possible. Early support for the Portland Opera came from the Bureau of Parks and Recreation when we first performed in the Rose Garden in 1964. We had a special champion then in Dorothea Lynch, the 35-year director of recreation for the city. We bring internationally recognized singers to Portland each season that work with our local orchestra and chorus. We live and die by the quality of what we put on our stage. And we're justly proud of the work we do artistically. But I just wanted to mention a few things today that Commissioner Fish touched on, sources of pride for us as a company and I think for our community. We're the second opera company in the United States to introduce surtitles in 1982. Now, most people that are afraid of opera are afraid because they don't speak German, Italian, or English, or Spanish, or Russian. And that was always a barrier in people feeling access to opera. But we introduced titles in 1982 where we have a screen above the stage. So Carmen being sung in French, the average person can just be dropped at the opera and know what they're singing by the translation above the stage. And my predecessor, Robert Bailey, introduced that in 1982. And we were the second opera company to do that. That has been instrumental in bringing opera much more as an accessible art form to the general public. Interestingly enough, in a recent national survey, the Portland Opera has the youngest opera demographic in the United States. So we have a lot of young people that are turned on to opera. We serve over 300,000 people in our region each year, and over 50,000 of them are served at free or at greatly reduced costs. Perhaps the thing I'm most proud of with our company is our outreach and education program. We have the most extensive outreach and education program in the Western United States. It's called POGO, Portland Opera to Go. That program is a one-hour opera in English with professional singers, sets and costumes that tours literally every corner of Oregon. And last year we went to Northern California and Southern Washington. We present a one-hour opera in English. We work very closely with the teachers in various schools throughout the state. And we reach over 22,000 students a year. For some of those kids, it's their only exposure to live music and theater. So it's something that I'm particularly proud of because it was how I was introduced to opera growing up in a rural town in New Jersey by a company coming into my elementary school. This year in particular, we're very proud because we presented for the first time a bilingual opera production, a one-hour production of The Barber of Seville, sung in both Spanish and English. So that was something we were particularly proud of. As far as community access, we introduced rush tickets in 2003, and that means any remaining tickets go on sale for $10 to students, senior citizens, and military personnel. So we often see a line outside the theater with young kids wanting to buy $10 tickets to the opera. For those of us with kids, it's a way for children to be introduced to opera at a very reasonable cost. We bring in over 1,200 students to each dress rehearsal for free or reduced cost. We do a number of free lectures and performances throughout the community at libraries and community centers. And as Commissioner Fish mentioned, we now have an annual street fair where we this year we're doing it in the alley between the Newmark Theater and the Schnitz. We'll put up a screen, we'll have a stage, we'll have performances for children throughout the day, a lot of family activities, and then at night we'll be presenting a free simulcast of The Elixir of Love, again with surtitles, so someone can actually sit in that alley with a beer and see their first opera and know exactly what's coming on. Very PDX. From an economic standpoint, we employ over 500 professionals each season. We invest back into the local community statewide, over $9 million each year. We own our own home. We own the Hampton Opera Center, which is just south of OMSI, and we're very excited that the new transit center is opening up next door to us. And we just finished 16 out of 17 years with an operating surplus, which is sort of unheard of in the arts community nationwide. So we take great pride in having both fiscal health and artistic health because you can't have one without the other. But while we're while we're celebrating our 50th anniversary milestone, we don't want to rest on our laurels. A great city needs a great theater, and Portland has yet to build a great theater. In the years ahead, our goal is to see a new theater built, one that is architecturally unique, forward-looking, and visually compelling. We envision a theater that is so well integrated into the neighborhood that local residents feel welcomed by it. They feel ownership of it. And we envision a theater that is a great source of pride for generations to come and becomes part of Portland's iconic landscape, such as the Oslo Opera House in Norway or the Sydney Opera House. This new opera house would be a new home for the Portland Opera, but it could also serve as a venue for the Oregon Symphony, the Oregon Ballet Theater, and the Oregon Children's Theater. It might also be used for some of our Broadway touring productions that don't perform at the Keller. We envision it being very active year-round and bringing thousands of people into the neighborhood on a regular basis. Speaking of the Oslo Opera House in Norway, it's one of many examples where a struggling and depressed urban neighborhood was turned around by building a theater that eventually brought new life, business activity, and housing into that neighborhood. A new theater could be part of your legacy as your service to the city, and I hope it will be one day. So thank you all for honoring Portland Opera today and allowing me a few minutes to share with you this dream of a new theater that we have for the city and the community. With your continued support, we'll continue to create great theater and music here in Portland for the next 50 years, and hopefully in a beautiful new theater. Thanks again. Here's to the next 50 years. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Chris, congratulations. And a couple of questions,
yes,
and a comment. First of all, and we're joined today by Eloise Damrosch, the distinguished director of the Regional Arts and Culture Council. I want to acknowledge that thanks to the generosity of Portland taxpayers, the arts tax is now funding organizations like yours,
yes,
after fully funding arts education programs. The additional funds go to groups like organizations like Portland Opera, and we're very proud of that we are able to collectively provide some operating support for an organization that has such an impact on our community.
Thank you for mentioning that, and we're truly grateful.
Would you briefly remind us that you're going to a different schedule in,
yes,
terms of performance? Would you remind us, for those of us who want to get tickets next
season? Sure. Well, we're finishing our season. We're currently in a run of performances at the Newmark. We perform both at the Keller Theater and at the Newmark. And as I mentioned, August 1st is our street fair and our free public performance. And you're all invited. Bring your kids to this one. And then we close our season, and we are now transitioning to a new summer festival. So starting in May of 2016, we'll be performing four or five operas between the months of May, June, and July, and early August. It's a big change for us. We'll be out of the market as far as performances at our theaters for the next 9 months, and we'll reopen again in May of 2016. And this will be the start of a new era for Portland Opera, where we transition to becoming a summer festival.
Well, and for those of us who are already spoiled by things like Chamber Music Northwest,
right,
and all the other opportunities in the summer, and concerts in the parks that Commissioner Fritz leads, and on, this will be another wonderful summer tradition.
Yes. Yeah, we hope to make a bigger imprint, and, you know, it's occurred to us that the city is so beautiful during the summer, and there's very little happening in terms of classical music outside of Chamber Music Northwest and the occasional concert in the park. So we want very much to be identified with the summer months here in Portland.
Just the other thing I wanted to mention, Chris, is we were thrilled when we did the pop-up opera here in these chambers. It was, I think Eloise would agree, one of the highlights of the annual arts presentation that we've ever had. You had opera singers in civilian clothes all throughout the chambers, and they just stood and started singing, and it just captivated us.
Yes.
And I thought it reminded me of another experience, which was when we hosted the Major League Soccer All-Star Game.
Yes.
And as people were going from Director Park to the stadium and walking down a street, there was a pop-up opera.
Mm-hmm.
And the place, and hundreds of people stopped to listen to arias. And I guess it just reminds us how fortunate we are in Portland to have all of these world-class arts organizations that I think sometimes we take for granted. And maybe a 50th anniversary reminds us that a lot of hard work went into this 50, and then what can we collectively do to make the next 50 even brighter?
Mm-hmm.
So congratulations to you on your leadership.
Thank you, sir.
Can we get a picture with the council?
Sure. And can I invite up my two senior directors,
please,
Claire and Mar? Come on up.
I know what a vulture you are. You're an octopus. I got to get slightly ahead of you here. So.
And now for something completely different. Could we go to the regular agenda number 794?
Authorize a legal services agreement with Hawkins, Delafield, and Wood LLP for bond counsel services.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Madam President, Commissioners. I'm Ben Walters with the City Attorney's Office. I'm here instead of Linda Law, who actually took the lead for our office on this project and helped with writing the procurement documents and selection of this the winning candidate. She unfortunately had a scheduling conflict, so you'll have to settle for me instead this morning. The City Attorney's Office and the Office of Management, Finance, Debt Management Division are here today with an ordinance seeking authority to enter into a new bond counsel legal services agreement. The proposed contract is for a 5-year term with a not to exceed amount of $1.5 million. The City Attorney's Office issued a request for qualifications to law firms with municipal financing specialty in May 2015. In addition to having legal knowledge and expertise in municipal financing and tax-related subjects, the RFQ also asked for information about the responding firm's affirmative action, diversity, and equity efforts. Three law firms responded to the RFQ. Hawkins, Delafield, and Wood LLP was assessed to be the most qualified among those responding firms. Hawkins is ready and willing to enter into the bond counsel legal services agreement. Hawkins is the city's current bond counsel under a contract for bond counsel services which expires on August 30th, 2015. This would mean that there would not need to be a transition of pending projects to a new law firm, even though we were prepared to do transition files and projects if a different law firm had been selected. Jonas Beery, the city's debt manager, will continue with the presentation.
Great. Thanks, Ben. For the record, Jonas Beery, city's debt manager. Bond counsel is a specialized legal service that helps us navigate statutory authority, federal tax code, federal securities regulations, and other complexities related to capital projects and the city's capital borrowing programs. We could not safely complete these borrowings without this advice, and we could not issue tax-exempt bonds at all without the legal opinion that bond counsel provides. We heard a minute ago about the passion, artistry, and hard work that the Portland Opera brings. The Hawkins team brings that same those same qualities to their endeavors, have a solid history of providing excellent service to the city, and they're very familiar with the city's borrowing programs and financial perspective. Work under this contract is billed hourly as it's performed, and work's only performed upon request of the city. Contract is managed jointly by the debt manager, myself, and the city attorney's office. On an annual basis, total bond counsel fees are typically in the range of about $250,000 to $300,000, so the proposed contract maximum of $1.5 million should be adequate to meet the city's needs for the 5-year term of the contract. Approximately 2/3 of bond counsel fees are paid for from funds that are received when we do a transaction, when we do a borrowing. Fees that are not attributable to a financing are typically paid for via interagency agreements with the bureaus for which the service performed, and those fees, those expected costs, are embedded in the bureau budgets. The debt management office closely tracks the work that's performed, and we allocate costs to the appropriate cost center, the appropriate bureau or transaction. As Ben said, the current bond counsel contract expires at the end of August, so we look forward to executing this contract and continuing the efficient and responsible management of the city's debt programs, and be happy to answer any questions.
While it's not a requirement of the RFQ, we should also note that this is a local law firm, so it's located right here in downtown Portland.
That's correct.
Do you know offhand what the response of this company was on the affirmative action, diversity, equity commitment?
I do not know the specifics of it. I do know from interactions with the firm previously that they have a subgroup within the firm that does the bond financing work. The majority of the attorneys within that subgroup are women and minorities, and in fact, one of the lead attorneys in the representation work that they provide is a partner, and she is very active in the bar's equity and diversity programs.
Thank you. Great. Thank you very much. Does anybody want to testify on this?
We have Mr. Charles Johnson.
Good morning, Commissioners. Madam President, for the record, my name is Charles Johnson. And I don't have any particular qualms against how it shook out for these three RFQs, but I do want to encourage everyone in the audience and our fellow citizens listening at home to think about the fact that the city engages a city attorney's office with a staff of approximately 40 lawyers who, because they have JDs after the name, are probably paid about what the five of four currently of you are paid. So we understand that there are built into the system special requirements that say that certain legal specialists have to work on bond projects when Amanda Fritz works hard and helps us to vote in tens of millions of dollars of park bond. Because of the way the system works, there also has to be an outside counsel specializing in bonds that they could receive this money from the city and not come and sit here with the people and talk about how their law firm is working to have more minority members and to promote women and minority members into partnership is unfortunate. I'm sure they would tell us that they're working so hard on that money they're making off of us in the bond process that they can't. But I would encourage you as commissioners with your $100,000 a year salaries to encourage the attorneys who are making more to be more engaging with the public, even on wonky things like this, so that we can have a more vigorous discussion about diversity and minority success in the city. Thank you.
Please give us your name for the record.
Okay. My name is David Davis, and I'm actually trying to talk to you guys about the Arctic icebreaker shell expedition.
You need to testify about this item.
It's a lot more important than this item. It's actually the whole stake of the planet's at risk. So you guys,
you need to testify on this item.
Might want to stand with the citizens of Portland against the Shell Arctic drilling expedition.
I just want to say we don't have 15 years to turn this ship around with climate change.
If you want to
everyone
testify,
is involved
to
with
if
it.
You want to testify, please sit down and give your name. Thank you. It's an emergency ordinance. Please call the roll.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you for your work. Aye. And finally, number 7595.
Create a local improvement district to construct street, sidewalk, stormwater, and sanitary sewer improvements north of Northeast Prescott Court in the Northeast 136th Avenue Phase 2 Local Improvement District.
Commissioner Novick.
Colleagues, the Council adopted Resolution Number 37129 on June 10, 2015, declaring our intent to initiate LID formation proceedings and establishing the name of the LID here. If this LID goes forward, it will eliminate the last unpaved street in Argay. Argay would then join Woodland Park and Russell as the third neighborhood in East Portland with no unpaved streets and the 16th neighborhood citywide. I'll now turn it over to Andrew Abbey.
Thank you, Commissioner Novick. Andrew Abbey, Local Improvement District Administrator. A couple of things. I just passed out Exhibit H to the ordinance. I wrote the ordinance before I went on vacation, and I noticed that it wasn't stapled to your ordinance hard copy, so I'm just passing that out. City attorneys advise we don't need an amendment since it's referenced in the ordinance. And then, as you may recall from our hearing in June, that we didn't have any property owners appear. I asked Carla if we could rerun the presentation from June 10th. Do you have that available, Carla? Meanwhile, while Carla is working on that, I'll just go ahead and get started and give you a little bit of background on this LID. So the conversations with the property owners on the south end of the block of Northeast 136 have been ongoing for quite a few years. So we had our first property owner meeting on March 31st, 2010. That was followed with a petition mailing on April 30th, 2010. We had a council hearing on July 28th, 2010, and the outcome of that council hearing was to amend the Phase 1 LID to improve only the north end of the block. And then we came back for a LID formation hearing on August 25th, 2010. We had another property owner meeting October 20th, 2011, another one January 23rd, 2013. And then you may recall that on April 30th, 2014, we had a final assessment hearing for Phase 1. And one of the property owners at the north end of the block, and I'll go through my presentation here in a minute, felt that there was an inequity that he was paying for his portion of the street to be improved and that the street was being used by, among other things, heavy trucks by the property owners on the south end of the block. So at that time, council directed me to do a council-initiated LID, which we brought forth to you on June 10th, and we're now here to consider the formation ordinance. We did not receive, and one other meeting that we had was on April 3rd, 2015. We had a property owner meeting to which all property owners were invited, and none of the property owners appeared at that April 3rd meeting. So the ordinance before you today would actually form the Phase 2 LID to complete the remainder of 136th Avenue. The remonstrance deadline was a week ago. I did speak or exchange communication with three property owners. We did not receive any remonstrances by the deadline of last Wednesday at 5 p.m. So just to move into the presentation here, just to kind of refresh your memory on this. So on this map here, the properties that would be included in the Phase 2 LID here are shaded in green. The properties that participated in the Phase 1 LID are shaded in orange and in pink, and you can see that solid black line on Northeast 136th Avenue. So that's where we did the street improvements that the properties to the south are currently using. So here's a picture of the first LID we did in Argay in recent times, about 10 years ago. That's what the street looked like before we constructed it, and that's what it looked like shortly prior to completion of construction. So one thing I want to emphasize to council is that when we petitioned the Phase 1 LID that was going to include the properties on the south end of the block, we had an estimated assessment rate of $7.22 per square foot. The ordinance before you would have an estimated assessment of $6.48 per square foot. That is a 10.2% reduction over approximately 5 years. So really what I want to emphasize is that we are sensitive to the financial expense of improving the street. And so in bringing this proposal forward to you, we've tried to keep costs to a minimum. And that 10% reduction, I might add, is only in nominal terms. So if you were to adjust that for inflation with the big upticks we've seen in construction inflation, that's a significant reduction from what we proposed 5 years ago. And we're hoping that now that times are a little bit better, that this is in a more appropriate time to bring forward the project to complete the rest of Northeast 136th Avenue. And then finally, I wanted to point out to council that I always learn a lot from talking to property owners. One of the property owners who contacted me after the resolution of intent hearing, who did not appear, mentioned to me that he didn't have sanitary sewer service. So one of the adjustments that we made in the LID was to include sanitary sewer extensions, laterals up to the right-of-way line for the majority of properties in the LID that don't currently have sanitary sewer service and are on septic. So if council approves this project, then it's what we call a complete street. While we're going in there and already excavating the street to put in the street, we can take advantage of that opportunity to complete our sanitary sewer service to the property lines. So council retains the full discretion to form this LID because, again, remonstrances are 0%, and under the city charter, council has the full discretion to approve this LID. We have some property owners here to testify, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Did you actually make contact with all of the property owners? I mean, you sent them notices and invited them to a meeting, but did you hear back from all of them?
Yeah, I several of the property owners and I talked on the phone. We communicated by phone. I might also add, Commissioner Fritz, we also did a posting notice on site, and we also did a publication notice as well. So in addition to all the notification for the meetings we've had since 2010, anytime we form an LID, we also have three means of notification: the mail, the posting, and the publication.
Right, and how many of the property owners did you hear back from?
I heard from three of them. There's two property owners on the east side. Let me pull out my ordinance here, and I can give you a rough proportion here. So in terms of unique property owners, not properties, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So I heard from 3 out of the 6. So I might also add, I didn't have phone numbers for some of the property owners, so it really is incumbent upon people when they get that notice in the mail. I always provide my phone number and email, so that's really my best way to get a hold of people, short of camping on their doorstep.
Okay, thank you. So we have some folks who want to testify?
Yes, we have probably about 6 people signed up. The first three, please come on up, are Bruce Rickey, Antonio Zamora, and Kyle, I believe it's Snuggerud.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Please give us your name for the record, and then you have 3 minutes. And you can
Bruce Rickey.
Thank you.
Go ahead. I live on 4515 Northeast 936 off this, and I oppose this so-called improvement. I'm not interested in it. It's half the value of my property. I'll never be able to make up that cost of $77,803 that for 100 feet. That's pretty expensive for a sidewalk. I never talked to this other guy ever. I've been living there for over 20 years. So the previous guy. I got this notice because of my neighbor, not because of this anybody else. And it's just too hard a ship for me to pay $77,000 for a little bit of sidewalk. And that's what I have to say. Thank you.
And the sanitary sewer connection, is that of any interest to you?
Not really. I have the sewer, and it's been working just fine for all these years.
Thank you for your testimony. Sir? Okay.
I'm Kyle Snuggerud. I own the property at 4525 Northeast 136th. We were not notified. Previously, the one that happened years ago, we were notified. Andrew knows exactly how to get a hold of me. He has before. I got notified by the signs on the street. That's when I was first notified. So I went up and down the street, notified everybody. Because if I wasn't notified, I would think nobody else probably was correctly. So we did that, but we are opposing it. We did last time. As you stated, the property value is not there for this. It's not there. It's not going to bring the property value up that much. Oscar, the person that's on the opposite side of the street, I know he's out of the state for the last month and a half. So trying to notify him, it probably wasn't there. I know he opposed it last time. Also, the lady at Barbara at 4417, she is bedridden. I do have her signature. She is also opposing it. She's on a fixed income. She would go into bankruptcy and be homeless if she was faced that LID. It's just the cost that they're imposing is too much for what the property's worth. Thanks.
My name is Matt Kaser. I work for Kyle at the business that's located there. A couple of things come to mind. When we saw the sign, that's when we kicked into action about how to address the LID and the impact, the financial impact that it would have on our company and personally on Kyle, who owns the property. And one of the things that we discovered was that through the process is that 50% of the ownership, diversified ownership, affected by the LID has to approve it. I think he's your staffer, Mr. Abbey, specified that there was no one that was opposed to it. Well, a couple things about that. Number one, as you pointed out, Commissioner Fritz, President Fritz, sorry, is the fact that he got zero response or practically no response, and in particular, no remonstrance, no official remonstrance from anyone. Well, had we known, and we looked through this, we looked on the city website, we looked through the ordinances, I found information on the resolution, city council resolution that discussed this, and had we known that there was a deadline for remonstrance, we would have been proactive about that. Our assumption was that today was the deadline for remonstrance, and so that's why we're here. Not only are we here, but the people that are actually physically present represent 45% of the property owners affected by the LID. And Kyle mentioned that Oscar, we met with one of the tenants on the property that's affected, that's owned by Mr. Hess, and were informed by that tenant, of course, it's hearsay, that Mr. Hess has been out of town since mid-May and is expected to return here sometime shortly. If you take the 45% of the people that are here testifying against the LID today, and add that to Mr. Hess's percentage of ownership, that would represent 75%, approximately 75% of the property owners that are affected by the LID that are opposed to it. So my suggestion would be that this process be revisited again so that the property owners that are affected by it can actually register their interest or disinterest or remonstrate against it or approve it. Clearly, it appears that that's not been the case, in spite of the fact that Mr. Abbey's attempted to contact all the property owners. Not everyone's been contacted, and not everybody that has an interest in it has had a chance to remonstrate against it if they so choose. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel?
Mr. Snyder, I thought that 5 years ago you actually indicated an interest in paving the street.
Nope.
No.
Property value wasn't there. It's still not there.
Thank you.
No, me and Oscar both opposed it.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
The last two I show are David Davis and Craig Coleman.
Mr. Davis left. Mr. Coleman.
Hi, thank you for letting me speak. My name is Craig Coleman. I'm here representing Trevor Reed and Kevin McAdams, the actual owners of the company, or owners of the home. Much like the gentleman just spoke said, we do not have property value in this property. We just purchased it in late December. They just purchased it in late 2014. And the assessment is way more than, it's way over 50% of the value of the property. And I can't actually speak to whether or not Kevin or Trevor received notice, but I do know that they were extremely distraught about the possibility of this assessment, and we are very much against it.
Thank you.
Madam President, can I offer a suggestion?
Please.
And I believe this has come up once before when you and I were on the council. I believe it's within our authority to extend the deadline for a remonstrance up to and including today, which I would move. And then I would ask the question, based on the remonstrances we've received today, what would Andrew's recommendation be for moving forward?
Mr. Abbey?
Andrew Abbey, Local Improvement District Administrator. Commissioner Fish, before I answer your question, I think it might be helpful for me to clarify a couple of things. First of all, it's important to note that these are non-conforming residential properties in an industrial zone. So the current usage of these properties is not what the long-term build-out is of the properties. The second thing is there was some testimony about the notice. Two of the gentlemen that spoke, their legal mailing addresses of record are post office boxes. And that's where we sent the notice. Now, I don't know how often they go and check their post office boxes. Secondly, the 60% threshold that was referenced, that is a 60% remonstrance threshold. So that would be what would defeat council's ability to form the LID. Also, I spoke with Barbara Grubb last week. We had a good telephone conversation. One thing that I try very hard to do as LID administrator is not represent what property owners' views are. My takeaway from the conversation was very different, that she wasn't necessarily opposed to the conversation. We had a thoughtful discussion about she had wanted her street paved for many years. She didn't, and I left her a message that, she didn't have sanitary sewer service. So I came away with a very different impression about her thoughts on the project. If anything, I took it to be more that she was neutral on the project. Also, Kyle called me while I was on vacation, and within an hour of returning from vacation, I called his administrative assistant and left her a message asking him to give me a call. I also followed it up with an email to Kyle, got no response from Kyle on that. So really what I'm trying to communicate to you is that I've worked really hard to be responsive to the property owners. My recommendation would not be to extend the remonstrance deadline because this notification process has been going on for 5 years. I think, however, what we could do is extend the second reading, and there might be some time to allow some additional testimony on the record. My sense is after 5 years of deliberations with the neighborhood, I think we've arrived at the point where council gets to make a policy decision, whether you want to move forward or not move forward. So I don't know that extending the remonstrance deadline adds any clarity to that process.
So if we were to set this over, say, a month, what would that allow? And first of all, I want to say just on the record, my own personal view is that you do a superb job representing the city in these matters. You go above and beyond on notice, communicating, and often, typically, they come to us without much controversy. And mm-hmm. That's a testament to the way you approach them, and I think you do a phenomenal job. And the rare occasion that there is some disagreement, we sometimes go the extra mile, and you're calling out here that there's a policy decision. So in order for us to have additional information to make this judgment, both on the policy question and to satisfy ourselves on the question of notice, would you recommend that we set this over, say, a month, so that you can have some additional conversations with the neighbors and with council, and then we could take it up again?
I think continuing the first reading a month would be more advisable than extending the remonstrance deadline, yes. And then I could bring that information back, and then council could make a decision what it wants to do. I do really want to emphasize, I just want to remind you again, though, that, and one other thing I should probably clarify, the very first phone call I got on Northeast 136th Avenue was from Snug Pro Wash, of which Kyle is the owner. So they contacted me, they had a real problem with the street being unpaved, and I understand that they elected not to sign the petition, and I respect that decision, but I want to make it very clear that the initial request to improve the portion of Northeast 136th Avenue that's now improved came from Snug Pro Wash.
Well, Steve, I think this kind of a hearing is not the best place to thrash out some of these questions. If we were to set over the first reading for a period of time, then Andrew could give us additional information and then come back, and we'd have the same options when we came back as to whether to extend the clock or to take action. And I would recommend we consider up to a month extension if that's acceptable to the commissioner.
I'm not sure what additional information we'll get, but I have no objection to that. Andrew, I do have one question, which
sure.
is, in the notices that you sent, did they clarify that the deadline to submit a written remonstrance was 5 p.m. on July 15, 2015?
Absolutely.
I guess the other thing that would be helpful for me to know, because we from time to time have people come before us who make a hardship claim, I'd just like to know in the briefing that I will have with you subsequent just what the range of options are for folks that do have a hardship claim.
Yes.
I know we have loan programs and other kinds of things, but I think it'd be worthwhile going over that.
May I make a respectful request of Commissioner Fritz as President of the Council? We have some other LIDs kind of in the pipeline right now, and what I don't want to do is to have two LIDs in front of you on the same day. Would it be possible for us to just continue this to a second reading next week and then maybe just delay? Okay.
The reason is that there's a lot on the agenda next week, and I think that it would...
I won't be here next week.
Commissioner Fisher won't be here next week. I think there's some merit. There's no point in having a public hearing if it doesn't matter that the public shows up. And I think it's very compelling to me that there are some significant concerns. And as I'd like to echo Commissioner Fisher's acknowledgement of all of your good work. I know it's been extended on this particular project, but I'd like to ask your indulgence in meeting with the property owners and seeing if you could come to some agreement. Because it's unusual for us to implement a local improvement district that would be costing property owners half the value of their property without their agreement.
So on that note, Commissioner Fritz, thank you. I might suggest that we come back on September 9th. I'm just trying to think of the whole vacation scheduling. I know some of you are taking well-deserved vacations over the summer. So
Thank you for that, by the way.
May I suggest that we continue this September 9th?
Carla, does that work?
Yes, I show everybody in on the morning of the 9th. Did you?
If I could just ask.
Time certain available?
Yeah, it would be 10 a.m. time certain.
Let's do the time certain, and then there will be further opportunities to testify at that time.
So I just wanted to know what, to extend the remonstrance period, you mentioned the notification requirement. How wide is a notification requirement in this situation where there's like seven property owners?
Well, it, the same notification requirement applies whether we have one property owner or we have 100 property owners. So we send out mail notice 3 weeks in advance, and we send out posting and publication notice. There is some...
You send it to the affected properties? Or
yes.
Beyond that?
Beyond that, there's no additional notification requirements, but the requirements are pretty extensive.
I mean, I guess it, I'm fine setting it over a month, but I guess it doesn't strike me as, you know, we've heard from, looks like 45% of the property owners. Sounds like there might be 60%. I guess I would support extending the remonstrance period, but.
I think, Commissioner, the advantage of setting this over is that if based on additional information from Andrew, we'd still have the opportunity to do that at that time, and it gives him a chance in the interim to see whether there's some accommodation. But it preserves the status quo. That's why I support it.
So
it does not require us to call that question right now.
Commissioner Salzman, really the policy question is, if you extend the remonstrance period and just assume for sake of argument there's 60% remonstrances, then it would simply defeat council's prerogative to form the LID. The complicating factor is we have some sanitary sewer improvements, which under the city charter, council has the full prerogative to form the LID anyway. So I'm not sure that extending the remonstrance deadline really adds anything. I think if anything, it just sort of muddies the water. What I'm fully prepared to do is reach out to the property owners to the extent that I'm able to contact them and come back to you on September 9th with a full report. And as I said last year, when we had a very vocal property owner who felt very aggrieved that he was paying for his half of the street and the people to the south were not building their street or contributing financially, I'm more than happy to just come back to you and sort of report both sides of it, and all of you can just make a collective decision what you want to do. I just don't think extending the remonstrance deadline really adds any clarity and adds some expense to the city that I'd rather not incur, especially if the final judgment we're not going to form the LID.
And colleagues, I'm concerned that if we extend the remonstrance deadline here, I don't see any particular circumstances here which would suggest that that shouldn't mean that we wind up extending the remonstrance deadline at all times and eliminate the concept of a deadline.
But I think we do adhere to those deadlines generally. And Andrew, does our code basically just require actual notice? So we had some folks who testified that they didn't get a letter or they don't recall getting a letter, but they saw a sign. I mean, you use multiple ways of communicating with the public, and is our ultimate obligation to ensure that there was notice from whatever means?
Well, we have what we call a belt and suspenders approach, and so code contemplates three methods of notification, but code also says that we actually can get by with one means of notification. Obviously, I never skate by with a minimum. You know, what's very interesting is I had a meeting with the Oregon City Attorneys at their conference in May, and we were discussing LIDs, and in fact, not to get into the weeds of this, but Portland's notification requirements are significantly more extensive than other cities in Oregon. So I just think it's important to note that.
I think at the end of the day, actual notice is what's most important, and we just went through this with surplus property about ways of using a combination of printed notices, signs at the site, and other things. So.
And by the way, I think it's good that the posting notice worked, because sometimes property owners don't go to their PO boxes all that frequently. They don't open their mail. And I take this as a positive that we provided the posting notice, and that was the way to make sure that people knew what was transpiring.
Right. And then neighbors talked to neighbors, and folks got here today. Did the city attorney have that comment for us?
I mean, we can talk about it at some other point, but there is code language talking about the fact that we have the three methods. Each of the methods provide the same information. So, for example, the posting notice also includes information about remonstrance deadlines, what's required to do that. And we also have a provision that doesn't require actual notice. It actually provides that mistake, errors, omissions, or failures with respect to any of those particular methods doesn't take away council's jurisdiction. So,
thank you. So I'm very grateful for your work on this, very grateful for the folks who showed up, and if you could meet with Mr. Abbey and make sure that he has the phone numbers that he needs. My thought is that the remonstrance deadline is somewhat moot because this is going to be a council's choice about whether to form the LID or not. So each of us can take into consideration the concerns we've heard from individual property owners without addressing the issue of the remonstrance deadline.
Very well put, Commissioner Fritz. And I will schedule a property owner meeting, and I may actually do something which I don't normally do. I may just tape all the notices on the doors as well. So,
well, with this smaller number of residences, that would be possible. Thank you for your diligence. So we're going to continue this matter to September 9th, time certain, at 10 a.m., which means that it won't start before 10 a.m. It might start after, but yeah, if you hear it at 10 o'clock, it'll be fine. Thank you very much. With no further business, we are adjourned.